Hawkeye, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is a minute past the hour. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And if you would like to be part of the Madcap Multi Real Time Merry Zany Wacky Extravaganza that is the chat room during the hours in which 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Yes, indeed. Picking out a screen name and a password, immediately being greeted by the likes of Anatole and Barkway and Chicka Punch and Squeaky and Steve from Jordan. And longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has elected to let discretion be the better part of valor this evening, he has folded space to become man cave. Yes, he did that furnace-like in the man cave this afternoon in Northern California. The 9th day of June, and Friday. Porch. Everybody else knows, who's listening live, knows the video. Right. And so, being Friday on the front porch, we will, in short order, in about 57 minutes or so, fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. We will begin that little exercise in conversation that happens only here. That is unknown to I don't know why it doesn't have more. Well, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and I guess nobody wants to flatter us. But anyway, we do something here on Fridays that doesn't happen anywhere else. We get a whole bunch of people together, and we have a roundtable discussion of whatever is on people's minds. And it seems like a lot of people enjoy the concept. I know I do. And so in about 56 minutes or so, we'll fire it up. And it looks like we're having a little more luck with the stress line, which is a good thing. We had good calls on the stress line last night. That means that if you absolutely, positively cannot use the Skype portion of Friday on the Front Porch, well, we do have one telephone line open to you, and that's the stress line, 304-663-4676. 663-HORN. So if you can't use the Skype group, then one person can use the stress line. And that'll all come around in about 55 minutes or so. Now, this is, and if you've never, by the way, if you've never participated before, just send a contact request on Skype, not through the chat room or anything like that. Send it on Skype. To Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk. And as long as you're not right-wing troll brain. And as long as you're not, you know, a jerk. Well, I guess I was redundant there, wasn't I? Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail and tell you which quadrant of the sky this evening's Bob signal will be flashed on the clouds, and he'll show you how to get right into the Horn Skype chat group. Pollen, sorry. So that's how the whole process works. And we'll get going shortly. So that. Now this is a listener supported broadcast operation, and I want to let you know at the beginning of the program, simply because we find ourselves in a great big giant freaking hole at the end of the week, with, of course, bills to pay. But there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, is what the lyric says in Harry Chapin's Cats in the Cradle. Now comfortably rewritten by TD Ameritrade. I'm still pissed off about this. There were planes to catch and bills to pay. I watched him take his first steps because I worked from home that day. Somewhere out there is some little jackass who's actually proud of him or herself for having taken that American classic and turned it into a jingle for a goddamn day trader firm. If there's a hell, I hope that the little imps are jumping on the bellows just waiting for that person's arrival. So, yes. Now, I want to thank Deborah for getting us started earlier this afternoon, because we had a tough night last night. We did have a $475 fundraising goal. Now, it is mercifully down to 449. $449. Now that might seem insurmountable. It is not. Because thanks to Laborman, and thanks to Chris in Germany, and thanks to Tom in the Bay Area, we have $200 worth of challenges on the table. And if that is met, then we will have $400, and that'll be $400 out of 449 that we will have raised to finish off the week. So, this is the Friday on the Front Porch Miracle Challenge, courtesy of Tom in the Bay Area, Chris in Germany, and Laborman. If you kick in $5 tonight, thanks to them, it turns into 10. You kick in 20, it turns into 40. You kick in 50, it turns into 100. Shucks! You kick in 100, it turns into 2. And we will thereby crawl out of the hole. In fact, I had a note just a little bit ago from Tom in the Bay Area. Subject line, I like money. That wonderful line from Idiocracy. Tom says, I want to put on the table a challenge. $50 for this evening, and I'm also kicking in $100 to the equipment fund. If you've got the studio equipment handled, then put it towards the generator power filter. And that is what we'll do. That's the next thing we're working on here. I've found a unit, well, one of two units, a 2,000-watt Honda or a 2,800-watt Champion. The difference between the two is the Champion's actually dual fuel. It'll run on propane or gasoline, which is kind of neat. But anyway, that's the next thing that we're working on here. But of more immediate concern is finishing the week's fundraising, because there are no ads. There are no pitches for you to grow your hair back with an herbal remedy. There are no exhortations for you to take an herbal capsule that will give you a rampant, resplendent sexual party time. No mattresses made out of foam developed by NASA. No vacuum cleaners, no bowling balls, no Bose Wave radios, no General Steel buildings, no lumber liquidators floors produced by, say, I don't know, deforesting some Asian Pacific jungle island, rainforest island. None of that. And that means that we can say whatever we want to. There is probably more freedom going on here than in most broadcast operations, because we are not constrained. I mean, I don't know how I could stand it if I had to say every evening that this broadcast operation was funded by a Russian oligarch. Ew. Look. It wouldn't be worth doing. And I darn sure wouldn't say anything unkind about Big Bad Vladdy Daddy. All the money might dry up. Now, admittedly, some of the money has dried up on this program over the course of a few months because I won't compromise my values in regard to some insistence that Hillary Clinton is the devil.
The devil!
Right, you get the idea. I think this country would have done quite well to have either Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton for president, but, you know, among the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade, there was only one possible outcome, and Bernie Dunn got robbed by the DNC.
Neoliberals!
Right. So there was, you know, there was a little bit of impact there, but we'll still hopefully reach our fundraising goal for this evening. Thank you very, very kindly to Sandra. Sandra just turned $25 into $50, and that means that we've got only $424 in fundraising to go this evening. Thank you very much indeed, Sandra. So that's where we find ourselves this evening, for Friday on the Front Porch. And one of the things that I like best about Friday on the Front Porch is that when it comes around, we have an opportunity to hear what other folks think is worth discussing, not just necessarily what I've picked and chosen. I'll do some picking and choosing during the next 45 minutes or so, but it's anything and everything you know, come the top of the hour. I don't know, Marty. Marty asks, did Vlad's check bounce yet? We've never gotten one, so I can't tell you. Uh-uh. All right, then. Where do we begin? How about this? Because I'll bet there's not a lot of mention of it. Just 1 second. There, that's taken care of. When the attack took place last week in London, ISIS took credit for it, even if it wasn't an ISIS member or whatever, some asshole that thought that they were worth emulating or were doing something worth noting. Well, the world reacted with understandable horror, and maybe even some shock. And so it was that a short time later, life went on, and life went on in particular in the form of a football match, what we call here in Merca.
The greatest country in the history of the world, on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, amen, under God.
A football match took place in Adelaide, Australia. 8 people were killed in the attack last week when a couple of maniacs, religious maniacs, fundamentalist maniacs, doesn't matter whether the fundamentalist is a Baptist or a Sunni, a Pentecostal holiness or a Salafist, a Shiite, or a Southern Lutheran. Fundies. And they've all got a homicidal streak to them. But anyway, in Adelaide, Australia, there was a football match between the Saudi Arabian Football Federation and Australia in a World Cup qualifier match. This was yesterday, or whenever yesterday was, Australia time, which could be like sometime day after tomorrow. Australia lives in the future. Ultimately, in what was described as a thrilling match, the Socceroos beat the Saudis 3-2, which is great for them. What was more noteworthy, however, was what happened prior to the event. Prior to the beginning of the match, it was announced throughout the stadium that there would be a moment of silence in memory of the 8 victims of the ISIS attack in London. It brought to you in whole or in part by funding provided by, you know, the majestic, serene, noble, royal, gracious highnesses of Saudi Arabia. Because over there you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a prince. And when the moment of silence was announced, the Australian team locked arms. And the moment, and you know, bowed their heads or whatever, and the moment of silence was observed. But during the moment of silence, the Saudi team just kind of wandered around on the field. Some of them took up their positions for the game. Others continued to warm up, perhaps bending over and displaying their hindquarters and stretching and so forth. In other words, offering no civilized regard whatsoever for the dead who were being remembered. Now, I want to be careful in this regard, because I don't much care for the militarization, nationalization of sport. You know, it's kind of icky and off-putting. Before the Super Bowl, when they bring out the American flag that's, you know, the size of the football stadium itself, and then we burn up a lot of jet fuel flying some fighter aircraft over the stadium that could just as easily be used to bomb some innocent men, women, and children, you know, brown people somewhere else on the planet. It's kind of gross. And other countries don't do it, because other countries are secure in their own sense of nationality and patriotism. Here in Merca, however, we have to be constantly reminded. And, of course, there's also the fact that the armed services pay horse-gagging wads of money to various and sundry sports leagues to advertise with them. Do you enjoy football? Well, then maybe somebody you know would enjoy joining up with the United States Army and possibly getting themselves blown into itsy bitsy teeny tiny pieces defending an oil well somewhere on this great planet of ours for this great country of ours. Go Army! Right? But that wasn't what was going on in Adelaide. It wasn't even a religious observance. There was no Jesusing. There was no loud, hypocritical braying to some distant, disinterested deity. Ooh, I'm going to have to jot that one down. That was very alliterative. Distant, disinterested deity. It was just a moment of silence to remember 8 murdered people killed by religious maniacs who are the ideological kinfolks of the Saudis, and 2 of whom were Australian. Now, by way of an explanation, the Saudis, who feel like they have the right to shit on any country in the world because they've got some gooey carbon under their sacred, holy, majestic sand, they said Football Federation Australia released a statement later on saying that organization had been advised by officials with the barbaric Saudis, because I'm sorry, it just, you know, greedy, barbarous, and cruel, that they would not participate in the moment of silence because, and this is a quote, it's not in keeping with Saudi culture. Really? Grieving the dead is not in keeping with Saudi culture. Mourning people ripped untimely from their own only finite life on this little blue-green time machine hurtling elliptically or perhaps helictically through the universe is not part of Saudi culture. That's goddamned interesting. You know that? I find that interesting because if you peruse the anthropological and archaeological literature, you'll find that one of those early markers of what makes us human is how we treat our dead. Bothering to bury them instead of just keep on walking and leave them where they die, or stacking them up in the back of the cave or rock shelter like cordwood. What makes us human, in part, from the earliest times, is some recognition of the finality of death, and bidding farewell. But apparently, that's not in keeping with Saudi culture. Yeah, I'm just going to mention again my fond, fond dream that someday this country will have an awakening, that we will get as earnest as we have ever been about accomplishing a goal in the form of this country becoming absolutely, completely, and totally reliant upon sustainable, renewable energy, and once and for all, tell the majestic, royal, noble, high, serene graciousnesses in Saudi Arabia to kiss our ass. And just let them sit over there on their sand-strewn peninsula as climate change continues to modify the world, relying on their hydrocarbons, and sink back into the sandy obscurity from which they fucking came. Oh, honoring people murdered by people who share the same religious views as us is not in keeping with Saudi culture. Fuck you. Or perhaps with a little bit more philosophical panache.
You dick!
Exactly. But then it got a little warm for the Saudi football team. And the Saudi Arabian Football Federation issued a statement. The Saudi Arabian Football Federation deeply regrets and unreservedly apologizes. Well, how nice that we got an extra goddamned adverb from them for any offense caused by the failure of some members of the representative team of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to formally observe the one-minute silence in memory of the victims of the London terrorist attack on June 3rd, 2017, prior to the World Cup qualifying match against Australia in Adelaide. The players did not intend any disrespect to the memories of the victims or to cause upset to their families, friends, or any individual affected by the atrocity. It is simply that the infidels have now gone to the hell in which they belong. Sorry, I added that last part. The Saudi Arabian Football Federation condemns all acts of terrorism, if anybody's watching us at the time, I added that part too, and extremism, and extends its sincerest condolences to the families of all the victims and to the government and people of the United Kingdom. Well, then. Okay, this is just a point of order thing. May require some Australian input. Are y'all technically part of the United Kingdom? I thought there was the UK, and then there was the Commonwealth. I mean, Canada's not part of the UK. Australia... I mean, do y'all consider yourself subjects of the coin? Or do you... I know it's complicated. But I never knew, because there were Australians who were, you know, murdered. I don't know if they wound up getting run over or macheted to death by these religious maniacs. But, okay, thank you, Ron, in the apparently two-puttable north. Says Commonwealth. So you're not... So, in other words, even when they were trying to pretend that they gave a damn, which they really don't, this was just an exercise in hypocrisy, they still managed to insult Australia. Because, and to the government and people of the United Kingdom. But
my mother mated with a scorpion.
Mm-hmm. Overly sensitive about this. Understand, this is not about Arabic peoples. This is about a government. A brutal, dictatorial government that seems to get off on spectacles of punishment imposed against immigrant laborers who are only there because they're trying to make enough money to keep their families alive, heads lopped off in the... I don't care how much wealth... How much oil you have. Barbarians is barbarians is barbarians is barbarians. By the way, Ron further points out, and the Aussies I know don't take any advice from London. The Queen may or may not be their official head of state, but that's figurative rather than literal. Well, okay, yes, yes, Marty, but I don't think driving on the wrong side of the road constitutes membership in the UK. I mean, the Japanese drive on the wrong side of the road, too. I will now get email for driving on the wrong side of the road comment. You can direct all your ire and umbrage and outrage at Marty. He started it. But it's worth remembering, and this sort of is a little reminder that's got more freight to it than it otherwise might. I mean, just, you know, that mental image of some Saudi backfielder or whatever you call the position, bending over and touching his toes while while the nation is remembering people who got chopped up with machetes or run over by cars operated by people who share a similar fundamentalist faith system. You know. Just sort of rubs the wrong way. But the fact of the matter is, the Saudis and their and the Wahhabist maniacs who prop up through their brutal repression of the ordinary people in that country, who prop up the royal family, they do consider the rest of us to be infidels. They do consider us to be beneath them. I know a woman who worked in D.C. for rather a long time. She's a beautiful woman, as most all women are. And she, we were talking once, and she told me these stories of how Saudi men who were sent to Washington, D.C. would ogle and leer at Western women who, of course, because they were not wearing fucking beekeeper suits, they considered to be infidel harlots and whores. At the same time that while they were away from the majestic, royal, noble, serene, gracious kingdom, would liquor it up real good and grope and grab at women because they felt like they were entitled to. Now, who knew we would go on to have a guy in the White House who feels exactly the same and yet is not a Saudi Arabian, but has a decided affinity for them? I know. I know. But Salafism, which motivates ISIS, is directly related to Wahhabism, which is the brutal fundamentalism that represses and crushes dissent in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, I have from time to time referred to the Saudis,
our partners in peace.
I've referred to them as the good head loppers and ISIS as the bad head loppers, because there's a certain amount of tongue in cheek involved with that. But realistically, there's no difference. 15 of the 19 hijackers on September the 11th, 2001, came, not from Libya, not from Iran, not from Jordan, but from the royal, majestic, high, noble, serene, gracious kingdom of Saudi Arabia, where they preach the tenets that underpin that sort of religion, fundamentally derived heinous maniac murder, virtually every minute of every day. I want to contrast that, however, because that was the whole reason for bringing up this story. I want to contrast the issue of the slur in Adelaide against another slur. And this has to do with another terrorist attack, which ISIS claimed credit. It was somewhat underreported. Because, of course, if white Westerners aren't killed by terrorists, it's not nearly as important as if they were. Okay? And so it was that bombings took place in Tehran at the seat of government and at the tomb of Ayatollah Khomeini. Now, you're going to have a real hard time getting me to get all broke up about anything happening to the tomb of a nasty old dead religious maniac. You could take, for instance, probably the vast majority of popes, and notwithstanding the pollution that it would cause, dump them in the Tiber and let them be carried out to sea, and I would not lose a moment's sleep. But there were real live human beings who were simply trying to live out their precious finite days as Kurt Vonnegut referred to us as sitting up mud. And they had their sitting up mud experience absolutely ruined by some religious maniacs who share a common bond with religious maniacs in the royal, serene, majestic, high, noble, gracious kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And the Iranians were disgusted by Comrade Kumquat's remarks on the terrorist attack in Iran, not really fully understanding exactly who and what Tiny Hands Tiberius is. The Iranians didn't understand that he is incapable of expressing basic human emotions like grief without somehow adding an aggrandizing, a self-aggrandizing, or perhaps a lecturing quality to it. Honest to God, a man who wants New York Strip burned down to shoe leather and then eats it with ketchup, I don't think there's really any debate over whether that person is civilized. Just saying. Now I'll get email from the people who like their steak well done. Sorry. But there's a lot of other stuff that points out Donald Trump as being uncivilized. You know, feeling like he can spontaneously grab women's genitals comes to mind. Came to mind for poor little Mika the other day. And I thought the entire desk there at Morning Joe were just going to take her out and have her thrashed. So it was that in the wake of the bombings, which, you know, at least Trump acknowledged as opposed to, say, the time it took for him to acknowledge a group of Muslims being killed by a white Christian extremist in, our next-door neighbor, Canada. Right, or the attack in Portland in which a white Christian extremist murdered a couple of people defending Muslim teenagers. Well, you know, I mean, come on, Iran, you got a half a loaf. He at least acknowledged it.
Well, see, Ron, in the two puttable north, that's because you're civilized.
Ron says, I like my steaks cooked just beyond the point where you could slap a Band-Aid on it and it would get well.
Exactly.
Ron also noting that Donald Trump has the attention span of an Irish setter.
Well, yeah, and the hairstyle. But anyway, Trump issued a statement regarding the two bombings in Tehran, which were of a sort of signal nature because they represented a sort of a first, ISIS reaching into the heart of Iran to torment people there. And he said the following.
We grieve and pray for the innocent victims of the terrorist attacks in Iran and for the Iranian people who are going through such challenging times.
I'm sure that Marcus Aurelius doesn't remember. I doubt if he can remember what he had for breakfast these days. But one of the first countries to express horror and grief over what happened on September 11th, 2001, was, in fact, Iran. Just a point of note. So he said that.
We grieve and pray for the innocent victims of the terrorist attacks in Iran and for the Iranian people who are going through such challenging times.
Which would have been okay if he'd just left it alone. But he can't. I think Stephen Miller must have written this for him.
We underscore that states that sponsor terrorism risk falling victim to the evil they promote.
Oh, Jeebus, Allah, Moses, Buddha, and Ganesh, mercy. Donald Trump is so lacking in anything resembling, and his regime are so lacking in anything resembling consciousness or awareness or, dare I say, enlightenment, that they didn't realize that you can take that statement, that second sentence, and apply it equally to we, us, the United States of America.
We underscore that states that sponsor terrorism risk falling victim to the evil they promote.
There are those who say that, as I mentioned the other night, I think when I was filling in for Malloy, Ward Churchill was hounded nearly out of existence for his remark that September 11th represented, from a foreign policy standpoint, chickens coming home to roost. Hell, I remember when poor old crotchety, cranky Uncle Ron Paul got booed couple of presidential cycles back for using the word blowback to describe why terrorism is a problem for the United States in our state of perpetual war. Why, yes, Ron, it is. Isn't the complete lack of empathy one of the hallmarks of a sociopath? Why, yes, it absolutely is. We underscore that states that sponsor terrorism risk falling victim to the evil they promote. That's kind of like saying, karma. Although I'm sure that's not the right term, and the Hindu religious scholars would say, oh, no, you've got it all wrong. And as a bonus, because you got it all wrong, you're going to come back as a cockroach. Oh, well, so I got that going for me, which is whatever. But Iran was justifiably disgusted by Trump wallowing in innocent blood. Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif tweeted yesterday, "Repugnant White House statement and Senate sanctions as Iranians counter terror backed by U.S. clients. Iranian people reject such U.S. claims of friendship." They used guns, they used suicide bombs, and they attacked the Iranian parliament building and the, like I said, the tomb of majestic, royal, noble, serene, gracious, nutty Ayatollah Khomeini. All six of the attackers died. That's why they were suicide bombers. Five of them were veterans of ISIS who had fought in Mosul and Raqqa. They were referred to as by Iran as members of Takfiri groups. Apparently that term is used to describe Sunnis who are extremist and fundamentalist. Yep. One group of fundies offed another group of fundies, which fundy Sunnis and fundy Shia have been doing, incidentally, for about the last 600 years. 1600 years. I'm sorry, not no. Since the, you know, 6th century or so. Follow the gourd, no, follow the sandal. Die, heretic, die. Just another moment of national shame for us. I mean, it's like going to a funeral and saying, "Well, I just wanted to share my grief and sympathy with you and tell you how badly we feel for you about him dying and everything. Of course, I'd like to remind you that he was a total pissant son of a bitch. God is love." I was about to use an image from American Gods, but I decided against it. I'm having a heck of a good time watching that program. Agnes and I both are. It's well worth the effort. Uh-oh, I think we have a correction coming in. We'll have to wait just a second and find out. Subject line, get a clue, dude. Bob, with all due respect, I wish you'd stop referring to Donald Trump as the President of the United States. There is no current President of the United States. Think about it. Is Donald Trump really a president? Jesus fucking Christ. Regards, Steve, in China. Yeah, point taken. But there's only so many... I've added Marmalade Mugabe to the mix. But the fact of the matter is, constitutionally, he occupies the position known as President of the United States, whether he knows how to or not. Brother Deacon Asa pointed out, reminded me of a quote earlier from H.L. Mencken. And I guess with H.L. Mencken, we kind of have to start saying peace be upon him afterward, because I don't care what any religion says. This man was a prophet. He wrote a column 96 years ago, H.L. Mencken did. And in that column, July 26th, 1920, in the Baltimore Evening Sun, H.L. Mencken wrote, "On some great and glorious day, the plain folks of the land will reach their heart's desire at last, and the White House will be adorned by a downright moron. Now, I remember first seeing this quote back in the early aughts during the Reign of Error. Because back then, we naively thought we had seen the worst presidenting that this country had to offer. The combination of an incurious dry drunk and a protoplasmic manifestation of pure, unadorned, unadulterated evil in the forms of George W. Bush and, of course, Count Dicula. I mean, at that point in time, Count Dicula seemed like he was just the human form of that glowing orb. Oh, goddamn, that's where the orb, that glowing orb from the first heavy metal movie.
I am the sum of all evil.
Fits. But then, let a little time pass, and the American people proved that they are capable of putting someone into power even more stupid, more venal, more ignorant, and more dangerous than Dumya. And, well, here we are. But that doesn't take anything away from H.L. Mencken. H.L. Mencken was right on both counts. It's just that the American people keep getting dumber and dumber. And, you know, they're being stupided, of course, by modern mass media. Whether it be advertising or so-called serious program, or Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. Yeah, I know. So I thought, given that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is such dear, close chums with the Saudis, I didn't see anything about the Saudis expressing condolences over the bombings in Tehran. I don't know. Maybe the Iranians wouldn't express condolences over, say, a bombing in Riyadh. But I thought that, given the fact that that Trump and the man he refers to as King Solomon, oy. Somewhere, assuming he really did exist, the bones of King Solomon are going, what? Yeah. Well, split my baby. I know. But I thought, given the close kinship relationship, there might be a little compare, because there's not a lot of contrast between a group of barbarians who can't even offer up a moment of silence for people slaughtered by religious maniacs, and a guy who can't offer up condolences for people slaughtered by religious maniacs without shoving, not just, you know, the thing about Donald Trump is not that he's going to get one foot in his mouth. It's how he's going to get the other one in there with it that makes it such an interesting prospect. But neither of those were way, 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 way up on the news of the day. And I thought somehow they kind of merited it. And of course, in the coming 2 hours of conversation, I suspect we will probably talk about the UK elections and the brand new hung parliament, and not hung in a good way. Which is, of course, different from a hanged parliament, by a long shot. Words mean things.
So that's all coming up. A reminder, if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, just send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype. And you'll be in the thick of things in no time. If you actually need a telephone with which to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, well, you can call the one line, the stress line, named for Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, gone but not forgotten these years now. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And we should have some rollicking good conversation. In the meantime, we do still have $200 in matching challenges on the table, courtesy of Tom in California and Chris in Germany, and Laborman. Every dollar you kick in gets doubled. And with that, hopefully, those challenges will not be left laying on the table, and we will finish out the week to the good. I cannot tell you how important it is. That we do that, because I can't even think of what I can't stand to think of a $625 fundraising hole for the upcoming Moran Monday, if there's a Moran Monday. Because program note, I may not be here Monday evening. I very likely will not be here Tuesday evening because of family things that have to be attended to 100 miles away. So that makes it even all the more critically important. Hopefully folks will respond. Yeah, okay, thank you, Clarity. Clarity says, got a gig. I am not hung in any way, sir. No, I'm off to work. Play it well and truly, Clarity. So we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, as capably moderated for lo these many years by Sparky. You can jump in as you wish. I will try to take your critique into account, Steve, in China. It presents a bit of a puzzlement, but it's not like it won't be the first that we've dealt with here. And we'll just see what's on our table in the coming couple of hours. Ah, thank you, Reverbo. Reverbo liked my alliteration, a disinterested deity. Awesome alliterative imagery. Thank you, Reverbo. Thank you very kindly. And I'm proud of those little art of word-knowing moments when they happen along. I was just looking for a nice bumper tune right now. How about let's... That'll work. Sort of off, but get it. You'll get it. Okay, break time. I'm Bob.
On the first part of the journey, there were plants and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz, and the sky with no clouds. The heat was hot through the desert on a horse with no name. Good to be out of the rain with your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain.
out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain.
I love everything they ever did except Muskrat Love, and no. America, Horse with No Name from back in the 70s, and it is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn, and we are connected to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, where Sparky is moderating, as he has for lo these many years. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
There you are. Okay, it's those couple of seconds of delay that make me go, "Oh no!"
No, I have to push the mic button to unmute.
Ah, okay, that's fine.
Because I was having a sneezing fit a while ago.
Oh, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Well, I just turned the fan on, and for some reason, it got me the sneezing.
Well, you probably stirred up some dust or pollen or something.
Yeah, something. It's not that hot today, but it was. I just wanted to get some air moving in here.
Yeah, it's just nice.
I got all the doors open and the wind's blowing. We might have some thunderstorms later. There's one south of here hitting.
In which case, you'll have to hightail it to the house, because the rain on the metal roof will sound like thunder, right?
Well, if that happens, I'll just mute.
Oh, well, okay, you can do that too. Probably beats the hell out of getting soaked by the... Right, I don't know. Sometimes I talk before I think. Some would say I do that a lot.
Yeah, I found out that old saying about the weather changing and affecting your bones.
Yeah.
Well, I got my knee that I had surgery on when I was in the Air Force twice started acting up on me and got really sore, and I hardly walked the other day. But it's
does the part of your back that you had worked on, does it get that way at all?
Sometimes when I do certain things, it'll ache a little bit. But it's just, you know, growing old.
It beats the hell out of the alternative.
Yeah, well, I'll be 66 in October, so.
Well, I'm operating under the theory that you had two very long-lived parents, so you're almost still a teenager.
Yeah, but I got bum knees from being an electrician for 40 years.
Well, whose fault is that?
Sparky, do you really act like a teenager, though?
Well, I got long hair like a hippie.
Oh, there you go. Okay, that works.
Hey, you know what I found out about my electric rat zapper, since there's no more rats around?
Yes.
It kills roaches, too.
Good.
I come out, and a little light will be blinking, and I look down in there, and here will be a roach, right where the two plates. There's a center plate and an end plate. And when you step off the center plate to the end plate, you touch both plates, it gets you. So I found.
Well, see, you're one of those humans that 2 or 3 million years from now, the 6-foot-tall sentient race of cockroaches will not be worshiping as a god. You'll probably be the devil.
Well, I'm lining them up. I'm keeping the carcasses as trophies for a body count. Since there's no more rats, and the dead bugs don't stink that much.
Only if they're stink bugs.
But I found out they like peanut butter, I guess.
Oh, roaches like everything.
So I'll see if I can get another one.
I think they're what biology refers to as opportunistic eaters. You know, just like the way Republicans look at poor people.
But it's simply a nice day otherwise. I went out and I looked at Lassen a few minutes ago, and it's starting to show some signs of snow melt. And I think we had rain the other night, so it might have got some new snow.
So it's clear enough you can see that you can see the peak?
Yeah, there's no clouds on it today.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, let's here early in the process... because I'm feeling really inspired about the successes we've had, awkward, with the stress line lately. Andrew is on the stress line, and let's see if the conversation's working for him. Are you there, Andrew?
I'm right here.
Okay, great. And did you hear Sparky?
Yeah.
Great. This is exciting.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to your... initial foray onto the front porch.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm driving down the road doing the truck driver thing, so wish I could be online directly, but I'm glad to be at least the best that I can be part of the group.
So, if you don't mind us asking, whereabouts are you as you're going down the road?
I'm all over the country. Currently, I'm in the Mike Pence of the States.
Oh, Talibandiana.
Yep, exactly. And I'm heading down to Laredo, so down to good old Texas, you know.
So out of curiosity, when you crossed into Talibandiana, Andrew, do they still have the giant abortion billboard up right next to the sign that says Raper Recreational Vehicles?
Yeah, I remember right next to the Trump Make America Great billboards.
Oh, well, because... Right, naturally. How could I forget? Of course, the last time I was through there, Trump wasn't even a blip on the radar. But those were more innocent times.
Yeah. And I'm going to do what we talked about. I'm going to step up because you are worth supporting, Bob. But you should be in a normal world that's not insane. You should be on 700 radio stations across the country. Instead of the right-wing insanity that is a story talk radio. So I'm going to step up, and I'm going to throw a Franklin there to get you going on the fundraising, because I believe what you're doing.
Well, thank you,
so
Andrew.
I get off the line here.
That's tremendously helpful, and that knocks down, well, every bit of half of the challenge that's on the table.
Exactly.
So hopefully other folks will step up, and we'll see A little bit of stress come off as the week comes to an end.
Unfortunately, you shouldn't have to be at fundraising. You should be on all these radio stations. You should be making much money as Limbaugh and the rest of them, which they're not making money either. But you should be on all these other radio stations. You're not. It's sick. You live in a very sick society.
Well, but then again, I don't necessarily know that I could stand myself if I had Limbaugh money. Look what it did. Look what it did to him.
Exactly. Destroyed him. Destroyed him.
Yeah. But I really appreciate it, Andrew. I do very, very much. And welcome. And the way this works, you know, as the conversation progresses, just jump in. Jump in anytime. That's what gets the round table going around.
Can I throw something in real quick? Out there real quick, just something I kind of just wanted to get off my chest here.
Absolutely.
Brought up earlier. The rage in my me when I think of some of these Republicans have done to this country, compared with the Saudi Arabians have done the country, to their country, and to the wanting one of the world, I have such rage. It's almost like that scene from, about another Star Wars scenario, when Anakin takes out the Saiyan man, after they kill his mother and what he says after that. I have almost that much rage to these people. But having said that, I have a certain matter of respect for them and a certain level compared to what you were saying earlier. And these people, and I don't know what to call them, I wish they'd just put the sheets on and go away, because they are just, they're just, I don't know what to call them. Maybe you come up with a name to call these people. And these are the group of people who obviously are the ones, obviously Bill Maher should have said what he said, of course. But the same people that tried to take out Bill Maher basically took trying to take out Stephanie Miller, take out Mike Malloy, and what you just said tonight took away fundraising from you. Because the truth, because of Hillary, because you support Hillary over this psycho fuck that's in the White House? You're talking about facts and the truth, and these people are in their own little insane world. These people aren't liberal. What the hell are these people? What do you call these people who would try to take down the only progressive radio people we have out there talking? To what?
Well, because this is, Andrew, this is the curse of ideological purity, okay? This is what happens when people don't have a fully functioning understanding of the nature of the system that exists in this country. Because change in this country never happens overnight. But what we saw in 2016 was a bunch of people who said, it either happens right now or fuck it, I'm done, I quit, I'm taking my ball, I'm going home.
What happened in 2000?
I mean, look, what would have happened to the this is in part, and I don't mean to sit here and filibuster on the rest of the front porch, but you've asked a very important question, and I respond with questions of my own. What would have happened to the struggle for women's suffrage had they gone away the first time they were mistreated by the white male power structure? I mean, there, if you go to Washington D.C. sometime, on the corner, it's called the Gallatin House, and it houses the National Women's Voting Rights Museum. Now, that building has been there since before the War of 1812. It's right across Constitution Avenue from the back corner of the Supreme Court. And there are two slabs of concrete there that are all that remain of the prison in which women's voting rights advocates were detained and tormented. The women getting the vote did not happen overnight, and it damn sure would not have happened had the first time that they were told no. That, well, okay, screw it, we quit. But that's what we are to a certain extent dealing with, or it certainly feels that way to me. Of course, I will now get emails calling me a neoliberal for saying that. Or an establishment shill. There's always establishment shill.
It's the truth. You speak the truth. And the fact is, truth be known, well, weren't all these women dead when they actually got the right to vote? They were all dead. They all died of old age, right? I mean, there were
a lot of women who did not cross over Jordan, to use the biblical analogy.
Right. Yes.
And, you know, before he died, Dr. King said, I may not get there with you. But that does not, but, and I'm paraphrasing, but that does not make me want to work for our goals any less. It takes, the nature of the American system of governance is such that social change takes a long damn time. I mean, with what my colleagues and I do with mountaintop removal and the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, for instance, we're Johnny come latelys. God, we've only been working on this bill in the House of Representatives and trying to get it introduced in the Senate for 5 years. There are people working on bills that have been introduced a hell of a lot longer than that, and they're not walking away. But because we have failed to educate on how the system of governance works, you've got people who say, "Oh, I didn't get my way, fuck it." So, I mean, that's my best answer, Andrew.
I understand. I'll be here listening. Thank you.
All right, stand by. Yeah, you're right there, and your mic's open. Just chime in anytime. Okay, let's run over to the Skype side and check in. Hey, Mark. Good to see you in the room.
Hey, glad to be here.
Formerly of San Francisco, now of Texas. Do I have that right?
Formerly of San Francisco, now of Texas, and potentially soon migratory to some other state that has health care if things go the way they continue going.
I always wonder why, and you can chime in on this, why, I mean, I remember when Rick Perry of Head Ranch, Texas, was saying, all of y'all Californians need to move your businesses to Texas. did you fall for it, Mark? I mean, what?
Yeah. Well, it was partially that, and partially familial obligations, the usual thing.
Oh, well.
Most of my husband's family is out here, and they do a really great job helping me take care of a parent with Alzheimer's. So it's one of those. You give up some things, the beauty of California for the beauty of tech. It's actually really nice out here. You know, some of the mines are small, but people at least are decent to your face.
Well, and that's, you know, welcome to the South. I know Texans don't like to get, but by God, we're Texans. We're not Southerners. Well, you know, you fought under that flag. That's the one where, well, yeah, come on over. Hey, here, you want some cornbread? How about a glass of iced tea? And then everybody leaves and they go, God love him, he can't help it. Yeah, right? Is that what we're talking about?
That's what we're talking about. So, but, you know, the only way to turn the state from the color that it currently is to a color that's more pleasing to us is to actually be here and vote.
Right. And to a certain extent, just like I was talking with Andrew, like about the women's suffrage movement, you got to be there for a little bit.
Oh yeah.
And people who stay there and fight that fight are engaged in a profound act of self-sacrifice that is, it is its own version of nobility, if I dare say.
To some extent, I'm certainly not doing this for terribly altruistic reasons. But
and you're not up on the cross because you know we need the wood. I get that, but still,
it's you know what? This reminds me a lot of I'm old enough to remember. I was born and raised in San Francisco, and I'm old enough to remember working on gay rights in San Francisco. It's interesting to come into a setting that reminds me very much of San Francisco in 1985, right when I graduated high school. So it's just a situation where you have to be an example, and you just, you know, some people get it, some people don't, and you just can't convert everybody. You can't even try.
And frankly, there's a lesson there, again, from another women's rights movement. I've heard older feminists say, you know, it's not like we woke up one morning and everything was okay. There was a hell of a lot of struggle involved along the way. And people didn't, you know, I think it has to be manifestly better for this country that
people can come out of the closet or just be who they are and never actually know the closet. But it's also important to share and teach the nature of the revolutionary struggle, isn't it? Because it didn't just happen one night.
Absolutely. But I think we have conditioned ourselves culturally to, okay, fix that problem, on to the next. And that's really not the situation. It's, we fixed it, we made it a little better for the next generation. And if the next generation doesn't keep up the fight, then we're going to lose traction, just like we are with healthcare at the moment. And hopefully we can make the fight a little easier for the next generation, so that they're not quite as distracted as we had to be for our fundamental rights. But the fight can never stop.
Absolutely. There's nothing particularly humorous in what you said, but you're getting a cowbell for that anyway, whether you like it or not. Rights. this is that mindset that goes all the way back to that question that was purportedly asked of Benjamin Franklin coming out of the Constitutional Convention. Mr. Franklin, what kind of government do we have? And he answered, a republic, if you can keep it. And the thing with achieving rights and achieving human dignity is that there will always be someone who resents it and wants to take it away. It could not be any clearer with regard to health care. I mean, what is wrong with the essential functioning of a mind, Mark, of someone who says, I don't know, I think there are too many people in America who can go to the doctor when they're sick instead of just dying like they ought to. I mean, when you put it in those terms, it's like, well, goddamn, that's pretty sick.
It's not pretty. It is not pretty. But one of the things that really surprised me, I think, more than anything else, was the level of health care in the South, excuse me, in Texas, and I'm assuming it's an exemplar of the rest of the South, at least in terms of my mom's dementia care, is so much lower than that which is available in the large liberal cities. It's astonishing. And it's also astonishing the level of quackery. I've been to more bad doctors here in a short period of time than I ever went to in my entire life in the Bay Area. With a parent with dementia and growing up in the 80s, I see a lot of doctors. So I think expectations are very low. I think there's just a lot of people, especially in the South, who don't have health care, who've never had health care, who aren't expecting to have health care, and they just don't know any better.
And they wouldn't know good from bad.
Exactly.
I mean, I, not to tell tales out of school, but if he was on the line with us now, I think he'd tell the story too. Boss Man Wayne, who is the beating heart of this operation, who got this whole thing going many years ago, Boss Man Wayne just had a nasty bout with his gallbladder. And so anybody who's ever been down that road knows that that is a trip, that is a trip to Pain Mountain in which you crawl up on all fours, you know, across jagged volcanic glass rock. I mean, it hurts. And so you know how when we talk about universal health care, some horse's ass like Joe Manchin will say, well, yeah, but if we go to the Canadian system, you're going to have to wait.
Oh.
You've heard that, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Boss Man Wayne has as good a health care plan, because he's a union man, he has as good a health care plan as anybody can have in this country who isn't Dick Cheney and can just order people killed for their hearts. They let him wait through some 5 separate bouts of cholecystitis for 3 weeks.
What assholes.
Oh.
And let me guess.
And they were also regulating the pain medication because they didn't want to. They didn't want him to be addicted to opioids.
No, they didn't have to. They didn't have to do that because Wayne won't take it.
Okay.
Wayne will chew machine gun bullets before he'll ever take an opioid. But they let him wait through 3 weeks of absolute misery. Then they finally got in, and this is all happening in Beckley. And I'm not saying he got, you know, bad care, but they finally went in and they took out his gallbladder, and then he waited another week in more misery, getting weaker by the day. And they told him, well, you know, come back in 2 weeks, you should be fine. Because, you know, they did it laparoscopically, and it's like, ah, you know, it's no big deal. You know, it's like, ah, you know, God bless them. It's like having a thorn pulled out of your foot. Well, it's not. It's still surgery. And so he waited a week and went back and said, you got to see me. And so he got in there, and they went, well, golly, we think you got some gallstones stuck in your common bile duct. Huh, how about that, some bitch? And they did some diagnostic stuff, and finally, one doc looked at him and said, listen, you got 3 stones lodged in your common bile duct after we took out your gallbladder. You know, it happens.
Ouch.
Yeah, it happens. So they said, tell you what, you know, let's not fool around here. Let's get you somewhere better. And so they got him over to the University of Virginia Medical Center in Charlottesville. And they did the procedure. They got the stones out. They cleared a blood clot. Yay!
Ugh.
And he was up and calling me on the phone going, still alive, dude. You know, 2 hours after he sobered up. Because they didn't even have to cut him to do it. They went through his mouth.
Wow.
And he said, there are thousands of nurses here. And I had 7 doctors. And this is the most amazing place I've ever been in my life. And I worked on B-52s.
You can find quality health care in the South, but it will cost you.
Well, I mean, yeah, sure, that's not exactly a Band-Aid station at Emory in Atlanta.
Right.
I wonder what was such a big deal about B-52s with him.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, kind of high-tech, big, you know, big building, you know. This place is huge.
Ain't huge when you get a call inside of them.
No, but you know the kind of building they're built in. But he said it's the difference between night and day, the healthcare that we get in West Virginia and the healthcare that you get at a center like Charlottesville.
Didn't Cuba offer to send doctors over here some time ago?
Yes.
Well, I unfortunately given Trump's new stance on it, or excuse me, Adipose Rex's new stance on it.
Stop. Not another word. That's a new one. That's a keeper. Adipose Rex. Beautiful.
I was saving that for a cowbell, you know.
Well, you couldn't have played that better if that had been the Ace of Spades and the fifth card of a Royal Flush.
Well, hopefully the Royal Flush will be coming in 2018, but
little one.
We really, really, really need those doctors from Cuba. It would seriously help things out here. But I'm fortunate that we're close enough to Dallas that we are in University of Texas and all these very, very, very beautiful places. And, you know, I'm new here, so I'm still feeling my way around. His quality is that he is smart enough and centered in himself enough to say the three most important words, I don't know. And that makes us feel much more confident because if he knows it, leads us to actual solutions versus the Mickey Mouse solutions that a lot of other profession that's same. Anyway.
No, that's more than okay, Mark. And I mean, it's Wilson. The question becomes one of, I mean, we've got this. This classification system for hospitals, level one, level two, level three, level four. You know, the little hospital, they've got a wonderful doctor who does a great job with gallbladder. On the other hand, they don't do hearts. And I wonder it would be something interesting to learn. Is there a broader or is it a narrower dispersion of things like heart hospitals in countries that have universal single payer healthcare or some permutation on it? I mean, you're in Texas, Mark, and to jump from hearts to cancer, you've got the best cancer hospital in the entire United States in Houston at MD Anderson. But you know, how many people can go and get there? And the drop off, if you look at the ratings, the drop off is significant.
The other thing that might be interesting to know is whether or not countries with universal health care pay for people to go to centers such as that. You know, maybe they centralize their health care and then have people from other cities go to those places and remunerate the citizens for their travel and such expenses.
I would dare say they probably do. I mean, I'm guessing if you're like up in Yellowknife in Canada, you probably can't get bypass surgery there. But you know, maybe you go down to Calgary, or.
But let's ask a Canadian, Bob.
Do we have a Canadian? They're so elusive.
Yes. isn't that a TV show? Go Ask a Canadian.
Go Ask the Canadian. Yes, coming soon on the Maple Leaf Channel.
Ron's here.
Hey, it's
been here for a while.
It's Ron who never three putts.
What?
It's Ron who never three putts.
Well, not always. No, all I got to say is that before you would say that Texas had the best cancer place in the country, you might want to check with Kelly, because she's a big fan of Sloan Kettering.
Well, and they're up there, but at least if you go by a couple of the common reference standards, MD Anderson comes out on top just about every year.
Yeah.
But Sloan Kettering is no slouch.
No. And if someone needed surgery in Yellowknife or Inuvik or someplace like that, the medical system would probably, or almost certainly would pay for their medical flight and get them to the closest appropriate care center. No charge.
You mean something that actually makes sense?
Yeah. In out here in the real world, yes, it does. But in the fake world of
fake healthcare.
Of 40. Yeah.
It's pretty real out here.
Yeah, it's sort of an ugly sort of reality, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, that's very much it. Yes. Yeah.
By the way, Mark, before you get your bowels in an uproar, I grew up in West Virginia. I'm a U.S. citizen. I've been temporarily taking a respite in Canada for the past 40 years.
And the snow shoveling is really, you should see the guns on this guy, Mark.
No shit, son. I can lift 12 ounces all day long.
Doesn't even break a sweat. There's more condensation on that 12-ounce bottle than there is on his brow.
Well, this is why I bought a tractor. I'm too little to be doing all of that.
Well, all I'll say
is... Wait. You are you telling me that you offload your beer into your house with a tractor? Damn, son, I'm coming to your house. We're talking pallets here.
Mud and beer.
I don't know about you, but that's like Guy Paradise, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
There are perks.
So maybe you're not so near the rattlesnakes or whatever. I've had one trip to Texas in my life, and it defied a whole bunch of stereotypes that I had brought with me. But even in September, it was some blazing hot. It was hot in Waco.
Ooh, yeah, it's gonna be hot here. It's hot and wet and hot and humid, but there are more seasons here than there are in California, which is very nice. San Francisco is basically, if you're not in drought, then it's wet and wetter, and then if you're in drought, it's not quite so wet. So it's really, really beautiful here. There really are a lot of wonderful things about this part of the country.
Are you in the hill country?
No, I'm right outside. I'm right below Dallas, in flat as can be. In a little town called Kaufman. It's really beautiful down here. Lots of mud, but we're trying to grow things, and we're getting there.
Hot damn! Would you care to share what's going in the garden?
Oh, well, right now I have the back 80 rented out to a gentleman who's planted corn this season. I'm trying to convince him to plant soy next season. I have another 20 that is basically just pasture. We have some folks who are renting the space to keep their horses, and then the remainder is going to be organic garden of anything that I can get to grow here. So we moved to the point that I wasn't able to do my spring planting, so I'm going to start with some winter vegetables as soon as it becomes appropriate to put those in the ground.
I only ask because we're fast approaching that time of year when I enter into my annual phase of tomato lust.
I don't know how tomatoes would do here. That's a good question.
As long as you got water and warm soil, because the trick with tomatoes, even like around here, we've got a running line that you never plant a garden until after Mother's Day because it might snow or frost. And tomatoes are not going to take off until the soil, at least what I read once upon a time, until you've got about 72 degrees Fahrenheit soil on a consistent basis. I'm guessing you could probably grow one some bitch of a tomato.
You should see my tomatoes, Bob.
You planted those. Those have been going for a little while, haven't they, Sparky?
Since April 18th.
Wow.
Damn, you'll have your 4th of July tomato again, won't you?
I'm hoping. There's lots of little ones coming on the early girls. And then there's some even coming on the celebrity I've got.
Wow.
What, no mortgage lifters?
No, I just got 3 plants this year. I was overwhelmed last year.
Yeah.
I planted the tomatoes in a different place last year, and they just went crazy.
Well, that's what happens. You know, you have that phase of can't wait for a tomato, can't wait for a tomato, can't wait for a tomato. Shit, we've got a million tomatoes.
Well, we sold. I had the kid across the street helped me sell a shitload of them during my neighbor's yard sale. We made $50 a piece.
For a tomato?
Thank you for beating me to it, Mark.
Sorry.
We sold enough tomatoes. We sold $100 worth of tomatoes the way we were selling them.
That's what
you call one of those luxury tomatoes, those Maybach tomatoes, right, Bob?
Yeah, that would be your Bugatti tomato.
There you go.
I was going to say, what did you sell them to, Japan?
Yeah. No, people that were coming to the yard sale.
You gotta forgive us, Sparky. It's just fun.
I had the kid from the across the street. He was partnering with me, so he was the hawker. I mean, he'd stop everybody that would come to the yard sale and ask them if they wanted to buy some tomatoes, and they explain how much for the big ones and how much for the little ones.
Well, and so you did all
I still got the sign.
You did all the work, and he just came in and sold them, and he got half the profit. I think we have a future Ray Kroc there. Wow.
Well, I'm sorry, but Sparky's also created this mental image for me of the kid going, "Hey, mister, nice car. Pity if something happened to it. You want to buy a tomato?"
Okay, the sign they made was 3 large. For a dollar, or 5 small for a dollar.
All kidding aside, you did have a shit ton of tomatoes, didn't you?
Wow.
Oh, did I ever show you that picture?
I don't think so.
The whole dining room table was covered with them.
They were multiplying like tribbles.
Or tomatoes.
And the pomegranates are going to be just all the pomegranate trees around here. My neighbors and mine are all just flowered out all over the place. So they're going to be just loaded.
Well, you know how I am with commercials, Sparky. I would probably drink pomegranate juice squeezed from pomegranates grown around there. But I am not going to drink any of that damn palm. You know why? Because I saw their commercial. No, I saw their commercial. And apparently, if you drink palm pomegranate juice, some guy with a bow and arrow will come into your house and shoot your cat.
Well, I better be careful. I got 4 cats, and I'm looking at a building that says Wonderful Palm. I'm right next door to the Palm building here in West L.A.
Well, don't let the cats anywhere near it. I mean, go look at the commercial. It couldn't be any clearer. You open up the Palm, and four transparent red guys who look kind of like ninja archers pop in, and one of them lets fly an arrow, and the next thing you hear is, "Rear!"
That is not good. I have got to keep my cats away from that damn Palm juice. I knew it wasn't good. Now it's confirmed. Thanks for the warning.
Well, I mean, it's a public service program.
I'll see about sending you some pomegranate juice.
I'm just concerned that Sparky's tomatoes might, like, attack us. Remember that movie, The Killer Tomatoes? You know?
Oh, great bad movie. Oh.
Yeah, it's right one up, of the worst ever.
Right up there with Kentucky Fried Movie.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm growing them different this year. I'm growing them in raised boxes.
Oh, that's nice. What is that? There's a fancy term for that. French intensive or something like that?
I don't know. It's to help the root system spread out more, I guess. But, you know.
Hey, Bob. Yep. Not to. I owe you a huge debt of gratitude, by the way.
What have I done now?
You turned me on to the Ego outdoor overgrowth control devices. I started with the lawnmower and I just continued basically through the whole series. That battery operated stuff is amazing. I'm actually able to listen to the horn and mow at the same time.
Oh wait, this is a signal moment, Mark, because that means we now have 2 members of the Horn Podcast Mowing Society. That's you in Texas and our buddy Dennis in Kentucky.
Time to make some t-shirts, I'd say, don't you think?
I get emails from Dennis saying, "Well, we got a lot of mowing done today, Bob, in the 3 hours of your Thursday broadcast when I could hear you." Yeah.
Well, the city lawnmower, my zero turn can't hear you, but the push mower for all the detail work, it's just a joy. So thank you very, very much.
If I didn't have an acre to do, I would love to have one of those things, but I'd be charged. What do you get out of a charger? Do you usually still have charge left over?
Well, I have a long cedar line drive that's about 400 feet long, and I use the mower to get between all the trees that are there and then under the parts that I can't really ride under. And I can do both sides of that and clear up most of the stuff on either side of the front and side fences in one charge.
Wait a minute. Do you live at fucking Terra? Long cedar line drive? What? Is it, wait, well, no. It's 12 Oaks, isn't it? It's 12 Oaks.
I was just telling Ashley the other day, you know, it was
the barbecue is going to be fabulous this year.
Yes. It is actually a plantation style house. It was a plantation style house built in 1939. So
it's got to be beautiful. All kidding aside.
Oh no, it comes with a story. It's a really wonderful place. But yes, it does have a little bit of that Terra feel when you drive up to it.
And I was going to say, and you open the door and you hear the theme music and right. No, there's so much wrong with that movie. I'm not going to take that any further. but now I'm fascinated with that stuff. The battery powered stuff is even making its way here. But none of the Ego brand. That's apparently a Home Depot thing or an order it online thing. The Lowe's here has, I guess their in-store built in China brand is what, Cobalt with a K?
Yeah.
And they've got some of that, but none of them, because I did a little digging around. None of the batteries on these things have the same oomph as the batteries that they're putting on the Egos. Now, Ron, up in the Puttable North, didn't you lay hands on an electric string trimmer recently?
Well, now that you mention it, Bob, yes, I did.
Thirty-six volt
steel runs 20 to 25 minutes. Deadly quiet, like a ninja sneaking up on weeds. And 15-minute charge time.
How is it on blackberry vines?
I don't have any of those vermin. I got raspberries, but blackberries, you'd need at least a 0.09 or maybe a 0.12 to do blackberries.
I've been ripping hell out of them with 0.095.
Gonna be a good year for blackberries here this year, Bob.
Oh, we're loaded, and I feel real guilty about what I'm. You know, I should have just gone ahead and let them take the acre and then pick the blackberries. But no, I'm sacrificing.
But let me segue into something real quick, if I may, sir. You know, we're talking about triggers and what can cause. You know, inflammation is the root of all evil. That's really what causes just about every affliction under the sun. And mold is a huge trigger. You know, I put a dehumidifier under my house, and when I turned that on, it was pumping out a gallon in my crawl space every 3 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, and I live in the southeast where it's humid and acrid, so I advise anybody that has breathing problems or respiratory problems or arthritis or any of that, try it. I mean, it's expensive. Yeah, I did it right. I had a contractor come out. He tied it right into my electric box, and he also put a drain tube that goes out through the block so I don't have to go empty buckets of water every other hour.
Yeah, that would, you know? I was going to ask you if you had it like going out to somewhere, because
at
a gallon every 3 hours, you don't have much more time to do anything but empty buckets.
No, it would have been a full-time job, and I'm sure it's slowed down by now. I don't have a flow meter on it or anything, but you know, my crawl space averages between 3 to 6 feet down there, but that may have been, you know, a cause of a lot of my affliction. So it's worth a try. I mean, that's just my 2 cents worth. Just my PSA for the Horn family.
Well, and
so
you,
Steve, what are your afflictions besides the ones that we know about?
Obesity, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, neurological disorders. You know, I could make you a list, but that's
you goddamn
start.
Sure don't vote Republican.
Nope.
Yeah. You better not. Yeah.
No. Yeah, well, Bob knows better than
that. That's what I'm saying. The rest of those are pikers next to the Republican voting disorder.
So, speaking of steering the conversation a little differently, I got to get out of here in about 25 minutes. I maybe was going to say
please
something.
Do, Rick.
Okay, great. Yeah. I get to see a concert on Saturday. It's Chicago and Doobie Brothers. And, you know, the good news is I get to see the concert. The bad news, it's with just my son, not a girl.
Given the accounts that you have provided lately, I'd say you're probably on a net win with that.
I think so.
Otherwise, you might have to go shopping first.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I offered to take out a couple different ladies that I met on this online site to the concert, and neither one of them took me up on it. You know, and yet we're still talking. But you know, whatever. I guess they didn't feel they knew me well. One of them knew me well enough, but she's like kind of in a situation where she's grieving the loss of her best friend, I think, still. So I just don't think she's mentally there for a relationship, you know. And then my other friend is actually out of town in Chicago this week, the lawyer friend, who I should pool with. That's based. Those were three of our.
So she's in Chicago while Chicago's in L.A. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Hey, there you go. Perfect. That's right, Bob.
Can't get anything past me.
Boy, I tell you, you're as quick as a snap. So
it's like a steel trap, rusted shut.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So I've never seen Chicago in concert, but I always love really good musicianship, and that's the thing I remember listening to them a lot in the 70s and 80s is the horns. I love their horns and their I guess their melodies, you know. So it's they're jams as well. So it should be good. And I've seen the Doobies before; they're great. And should be a good show. It's at the L.A. Forum.
My favorite Doobie Brothers reference. Yeah. From the Romancing the Stone movie.
Oh.
When Michael Douglas, who's been in the Colombian jungle for God knows how long, they stumble into that plane wreck, and there's an old Rolling Stone, and he picks up the Rolling Stone. The Doobie Brothers broke up? Son of a bitch! Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. That's good. That's good. Well, so,
Bill Rick, may I ask you a lawyer question before you shake one out of here?
I guess my highlight of the day is I spent like most of the night working on a presentation, a slide to... slideshow for latest case law developments and tax planning suggestions and innocent spouse or injured spouse cases. I talked to a group of California CPAs, about 30 of them, and everybody gave me like the best possible mark, which was really nice. And a couple put their names on it as well. So on the, you know, the reviews they give after the slideshow. So it was good. It was good stuff. So go ahead, Steve.
Okay, well, knowing what we know now and what we've heard through the Comey testimony, do you think that there are grounds for impeachment, or do you lean more toward the Alan Dershowitz side, saying, no, not going to happen, there's nothing
Dershowitz,
there?
Dershowitz is a nut.
Okay? Yeah, what is going on with him, man?
He's had a loose screw ever since he handled part of the O.J. case, okay?
Does he want to work for Trump? Is that what he's fishing for? I mean, I don't know.
He claims he's still a registered Democrat and told Trump that when he met him at, you know, at
when
Mar-a-Lago.
He went to kiss the ring, right.
Right. Yeah. This is the thing about impeachment, Steve. It's kind of in the eye of the beholder. It's a real political determination, but I mean the standard. If it were applied correctly, it really wouldn't be a political determination. What is it? High crimes and misdemeanors or treason? Is bribery in there, Bob?
Well, see, that's the thing.
All right, and collusion is so muddy too.
Well, no, what's muddy, Steve, if I may.
Sure.
What's muddy is the idea is trying to get the concept across. Most of us understand criminal conduct in the way that it affects ordinary Americans. Namely, you break the law, you have a trial, you are either guilty or not guilty, and you either are punished or set free. And that's the way the criminal system works.
Except
the impeachment process that is contained within the Constitution, and this is almost like in my experience and what I've read, this is almost like a Zen concept. It's like some sort of koan, where you know you've got to be slapped on the back of the head two or three times and go wash your rice bowls and shit like that before samsara. The impeachment process contained in the Constitution of the United States is not a criminal process. It is not even a judicial process.
It's a removal process.
No, it is a political process.
Right, right.
And so consequently, what constitutes an impeachable offense, what constitutes how you go about doing it even, is a sort of an ad hoc thing that gets reinvented every time it comes along. The trial of Bill Clinton in the Senate was nothing, and I do mean nothing, like the only other impeachment trial we've ever had for a president, which was the trial of Andrew Johnson. They bore no resemblance to each other, save for the fact that they were both called impeachment trials in the Senate. And so there is no hard and fast rule as to what's an impeachable offense, what's not an impeachable offense. Andrew Johnson was impeached because the radical Republicans in the Congress hated his goddamn guts because he was going all squishy on the formerly treasonous Southerners.
So if I hear you, Bob, there's no precedence is what you're trying to say.
Precedent really isn't... For all that precedent drives most of the American judicial process, it doesn't in impeachment, because impeachment is not a judicial process.
Does that also mean that double jeopardy doesn't apply, just in case
nothing.
They start this
nothing.
A little prematurely?
It doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. I mean, this is an analogy I just thought of. I think it was Warren Berger said, I think he was asked, like, how do you know when something is pornography? And he says, I know.
That's Potter Stewart.
Oh, Potter Stewart. Thank you, Bob. And so sort of along the same line, same thing with an impeachable offense. Well, you know it when you see it. I mean, you know, maybe. I don't know. It's a real amorphous concept. I mean, it really shouldn't be because, I mean, high crime and misdemeanor, I mean, because the idea of a high crime pretty much connotes a felony, okay? A misdemeanor, obviously we're not talking about like a minor assault
battery. But Rick, if the framers had wanted to say felonies and misdemeanors,
yeah,
they would have. They were not men who were without the art of word knowing.
Well,
that was a deliberate
there.
Choice, because it also takes into account things like treason. And
right.
It takes into account misprison of felony, and it takes into account bribery and official corruption. Because there was no, at the time of the drafting of the Constitution, there was no United States Code. It's all common law stuff. And we forget that at our peril.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another concept that plays into this, and I saw Lawrence Tribe mention this on Twitter a couple of days ago, and I've been sort of mulling it over in my head. He said it is an urban legend that a sitting president cannot be indicted.
Lawrence Tribe said that. Okay.
Yes. He said it in the context of someone saying, well, you know, you can't try a president for a felony while he's in office. And he responded, that's an urban legend, and even if he can't be tried, there's nothing that says he can't be indicted.
Right, right. You can be indicted, and then they can stay it until you're out of office, basically.
Hello. I'm adding another lawyer to the group.
Yeah, hey, it's Steve in New York. Hey, Steve.
Oh.
Hey, Steve. How are you? I hope everyone's doing peachily well. I had to call in because I've actually done a little bit of study about this, and people... How to be polite but blunt, but people get it wrong. People get too hung up on the term high crimes, and they get too hung up on the term misdemeanor. what they have to do is take the whole term high crime and high crimes and misdemeanors, and you go back into the common law, and this dates back centuries, and you have to take that whole phrase to essentially mean abuses of power. This, right. It's not misdemeanors in the sense of the guy, you know, jaywalked across the street or peed on the sidewalk and got a ticket for it. You have to take the whole thing, and if you look at the context of the two enumerated offenses in there, which is treason, bribery, and it says and other high crimes and misdemeanors, you have to look at treason and bribery, which are, I'll say, offenses of moral turpitude and betrayal of the country.
And right. Yeah. Yes. Sort of like offense, so to speak.
Yes. Know? Yes. Yeah. That's what I would say.
Steve, does the crimes and misdemeanors come up in common law?
Oh, it's an ancient phrase. It goes back 1,000 years.
Jeez.
Or wow. Something. Yeah. This is all that Court of King and Henry II dispensing justice sort of stuff.
And the term may have been coined, and which means it's not something that was coined or alluded to around the time of the Magna Carta, which I think may have been in the 11th or 12th, even 13th century.
That's Henry II, then Richard the Lionheart, then...
Yeah, maybe not quite 1,000 years ago, still multiple hundreds of years ago, because I just happened to be looking at this the other night, and that's all. But it's... one of those things where it really is a term of art, and you have to understand it in the context of, as Bob said, a political offense.
Right.
And you know so what, Steve, if I may take it another step, you also, because there are phrases that you, not you and I, but there are phrases that are just, I mean, they need no further definition, given certain forms of education. It's vocabulary. There are vocabularies particular to given professions.
Mm-hmm.
I think you probably also need to, if you're going to say that high crimes and misdemeanors is a term of art, you probably need to define term of art, because term of art is one of those things that lawyers with beers, mugs of beer in both hands go, oh, yeah, it's a fucking term of art, you know.
like word great. What does it really mean, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. That's funny. It's like as a good friend of mine, we're always talking about, I mean, I don't take the law profession too seriously, and unfortunately, a lot of times they don't take it seriously at all.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine and I talk a lot about, you know, it's like stroking your chin whiskers and looking into the ceiling as you stroke the suede patches on your tweed jacket.
I had a judge once who did nothing but that for 5 years, but never mind.
Yes. Yes, and that's what it's exactly what Bob is saying. You know, you do all that whilst,
Bill, I think it's prima facie that's a condition precedent to the fee simple issue that we're trying to get to here now, isn't it?
Oh my God,
Steve, I got a question for you. The Steve mm-hmm. lawyer, Steve uh-huh. lawyer, not the other part of the fraternity, Steve. In your opinion, you think the Tangerine Twit has committed impeachable offenses?
100%.
Yeah, I think so too.
100%.
Especially with the Russians, the foreign adversary power, you know, basically, it's no different than like trading with the enemy, for example, although in this case, it's even worse.
Well, thanks, Rick. I was about to ask him the same question. Sorry to interrupt. Please go.
No, I mean, I frankly think yesterday I thought he had committed an impeachable offense even before yesterday, and I think the violation of the emoluments clause. I mean, it's pretty clear that he looks at the government as nothing more than a really big opportunity for the family business.
A huge meal ticket for him, basically. Is what
yes,
it is.
Yes, that's what yes. it is.
Yeah.
So I think basically on day one, but yesterday I think it was very clear. And you know, let me just step back for a second. I'm very I'm very skeptical about trusting any law enforcement person because I don't like cops.
Well, you're a lawyer who's defended people against them. It kind of.
Well, and I've been arrested before and had been beaten by a cop. So, and then I certainly don't trust intelligence people. And I've been very uncomfortable about this whole thing where, you know, people are so often citing the 17 intelligence agencies, yada, yada, yada. But what struck me about the credibility of Comey was there were certain things in which he confirmed what Pontifex Minimus said, and he was very upfront about it. And this did not amount to a litany of he did everything bad. It didn't amount to that. It amounted to a lot of that, but he didn't. He talked about things that didn't put himself in a particularly good light, and he talked about things that actually put Trump in a somewhat good light, or at least one of those rare instances where he actually told the truth. So with those things in mind, that's what gave me or made me trust that he's probably – not probably, but that made me trust that he's telling the truth. And another thing in particular that made me realize or believe that or no, think that was the strange details that he put in some of those memos. And I know that those are details you put in memos when you want to lend credibility. And the one that comes to my mind is when he talked about the door to the left of the Godfather clock in the Oval Office. And if you see pictures of the Oval Office, you'll see that clock there. So you know, people, when they write memos like that, you know, as Rick knows, we call them memos to file, which is typically something you do when you have a client conversation and you want to document that. But you put small details just to show that a third party reading that knows that it really is some sort of contemporaneous and accurate.
Well, I'm sorry, just to interrupt real quick, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the word contemporaneous. That's critical here because those memos to file serve, especially for someone who could be called upon to testify, as there's a particular function within the rules of evidence, and the rules of evidence have to do with what can and cannot be admitted at trial as actual evidence by which one judges the controversy in question.
Mm-hmm.
And those memos to file constitute a recorded recollection. And a recorded recollection, when recorded at a near contemporaneous, setting.
Contemporaneity, I think, Bob.
Yeah, that wasn't going to happen, Rick. but they have a special value within evidence, whereas a document, let's say something happens on Friday, I write a memo about it. Let's say I write a memo about this program immediately after the program's over. Well, that's going to have more probative value of the conduct of the content of the program than a memo I write a week and a half later. It's also going to speak to its admissibility outside the concept of hearsay, right?
Precisely. Yeah. Yeah.
And so
it's regarded as accuracy. That's basically the basis for a lot of evidentiary rules. Is this going to help to advance the search for the truth or not? Is this evidence of probative value? Is it likely to be accurate? If it's not, then it's not allowed. That's why that's
relevance,
the basis,
probity,
disallowing hearsay. Yeah.
Relevance, probity, and prejudice.
Right. Right. Exactly.
But that's kind of the reason that you're right, Steve. He didn't come across like he was giving the gospel from on high. He was flawed, and one of the things that kind of made me go huh is there was what at least to me And I'm not defending. I'm not defending Donald Dick. There's kind of a broad passage of time between the creation of the memo and the meeting that the memo was about. Am I mistaken?
I think he wrote the memos fairly close in time to when the meetings occurred. I think your comment was different than that, though, Bob.
Well, I thought I got the impression that there was a day or two in between.
I think a day or two is not that big a deal. One of them he dictated, I think, in a government vehicle on his computer or something like that. Right, once he got out of the meeting with Trump. I mean, the reason why he created those is what Trump was doing was highly improper. He knew it. He sensed it. He's a seasoned attorney.
And he memorialized it.
And he put it in the file. It's sort of a cover your ass memo, because who knows what the fuck this guy is going to say I did or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
someone you can't trust, you've got to memorialize shit. You know, Bob?
One other thing relating to all of this that that comes to mind that I thought of is, you know, in the aftermath of it, that pettifogging ambulance chaser, arm twisting letter writer, Mark Kasowitz.
Oh God. He's a total falterer, isn't he, Bob?
Oh, he's pathetic.
Yeah.
But he immediately started and he started talking about, oh, Comey's a leaker, Comey's a leaker, Comey's a leaker. Right? Well, does anybody remember on the program a few weeks ago when that hayseed sucking corn pone jackass from Louisiana got laughed at by the entire room when, who was it, Clapper maybe? Said, Congressman, if it's not classified, you can't leak.
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, Comey didn't release anything that was classified. Therefore, ergo, yeah. Not a leak. But lo and behold, that is something that the Republicans, who care more about power than they do about the integrity of government, and prove it every fucking day, have seized of, oh, Comey's a leaker, Comey's a leaker, Comey's a leaker. No, it wasn't classified, and therefore cannot be deemed a leak.
Absolutely. I mean, it's paltering, Bob. I mean, it's basically a real half truth, and it's misleading, and it just is not, you know, it's just not a valid argument. It's a logical fallacy.
And
right?
just because I'm a grammar fascist, if you look at the actual memo that Kasowitz generated, yeah. Apparently he had little Boron type it.
Okay.
Because a first year summer intern law clerk would have had it sent back by anybody resembling a competent lawyer, going, God damn, I buy computers around here. Didn't you use the spell check? Predizent? Predizent?
You know, I heard the people on CNN talking about the typos in that. I didn't read it, but that's like pathetic. I mean, it's sort of like they're kind of doing a garage sale at the White House. That's sort of the way they're managing the place, you know?
Well, Kasowitz is way out of his depth.
Civil attorney? I mean, a civil litigator? No, I don't think so. You need someone like a Comey on your defense team, or like a Eric Holder or someone like
that. There was a story out. Okay, everybody of a certain age who remembers the Iran-Contra hearings, remember the testimony? I'm holding my hand up. Remember the testimony of Oliver North when he showed up in his Marine suit, even though he wasn't a Marine anymore, and he brought this Washington lawyer with him, who was constantly elbowing Ollie and leaning over and covering the mic with his hand, and peas and carrots and peas, peas and carrots, carrots and peas. And when some senator or whatever said, really, can we have a hearing here, counselor? He said, sir,
I am not a potted plant. You remember that dickhead?
That dickhead's
name was Brendan Sullivan.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Donald Trump recently tried to hire Brendan Sullivan.
Okay.
And Brendan Sullivan said, you know, I think I'm washing my hair that month.
Is he like with one of those big firms like Williams and Connolly or something like that?
Dewey, Cheatham and Howe.
Fuck
them stupid and blind. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, we had one that was called Beat 'em, Flog 'em, and something. I forget what it was.
But when you, Donald Trump, cannot hire the guy who was willing to defend a scumbag like Ollie North.
Yeah.
Well, Mother McCree, you've got a problem.
Drug runner, basically.
But he didn't spell president wrong. That you're missing the point. That was like kofefe. That's one of those old Arabic words.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, he's the president. That's the old. That's an old Arabic word meaning friend of King Solomon.
Exactly. Who drinks kofefe every morning?
Well, hey guys, I'm being given the kind of the heave ho for the final countdown. We have a building generator test this weekend, which means that I won't have access to my computer and I got to shut her down. So you all have a good weekend and I'll give you guys a concert report next time around, okay?
Well, thank you very kindly and good luck to the folks in generating buildings.
There you go. Yeah, it's actually an emergency generator for the building. I think I used the wrong order of it. Hey, that's what happens when you're on an hour and a half of sleep, you know? Okay, you all, take care, okay?
Have a great time, Rick.
Thanks. Take care now. Bye. It's off to the happy hour and SF Grill and burgers and cheap beer for me. So there you go. Watch the Dubs win the game four, right?
Game four.
All right, see you all.
All right, later, Rick.
Bye.
There's another thing that let me just interrupt here for a moment and offer up some profound thanks. Andrew, thank you very kindly. Angel, thank you very kindly. Anonymous person, thank you very kindly. Let me get through the, let me just check the list here. Make sure I don't miss any. Let's see. Deborah, thank you. Sandra, you know who you are. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Angel. I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Vince. And like I said, thank you, Anonymous. I can report that we have met the Friday on the Front Porch miracle goal. Wait a minute. I think I've got something that works for that. We've met the Friday on the Front Porch miracle goal.
Woo-hoo! Yeah. Praise Jesus.
And so that means we finished the week to the good. At the risk of coming across like some sort of freak or ingrate or whatever, remember, I'm going to be gone for at least one night at the first of next week. So if we want to get started on that, that's cool, too.
More? You want more?
More, please. No, I just don't want to be. I don't want to be in a prayer meeting Wednesday hole. That's all. But that's where we. But thanks everybody for meeting that challenge. That was huge. That was tremendous, and that was immensely important because there's stuff that's got to be paid, you know, lickety split, or else you know hell's a popping.
That was a lot of people really coming together, Bob. That sounded really, really good.
It was, and it's you know. I never cease to be inspired by the way that this keeps going, because we're
you know, we're not sponsored by a Russian oligarch who owns Sputnik. Okay? We don't have the deep pockets of a trial lawyers group behind us. What we have is people who appreciate straightforward conversation and just the ability to engage in an uncensored fashion in a discussion and perhaps even some problem solving or an attempt to solve problems. And I think that's what makes what happens here so very, very unique. So I want to thank everybody for all they did to make this to meet this challenge this evening. And thanks to Laborman and Chris and Tom in the Bay Area for putting the challenge on the table that got it done. So thanks, everybody, and I'm sorry for the interruption to the program. But I wanted to bring another topic to the table. Because, and look, I hear people say, well, you know, the goddamn DNC establishment neoliberal shills think they're going to win an election running on the Russia investigation. Well, they're not. They don't understand that those Klansmen out there have economic anxiety. And, well, okay, but there's an assumption there, and yeah, I'm painting with a broad brush, and I'm being a sarcastic jerk. And I realize that. But you do, you've probably heard it yourself. No one's saying that we're going to run against Donald Trump in 2020 on, oh, by the way, Mark, what was that phrase you used earlier that got the cowbell?
Adipose Rex?
Adipose Rex, yes. I just wanted to make sure that, yes.
That's with a W, by the way.
Yes, W-R-E-C-K-S, yes. Who knows? That may be coming to a T-shirt near you sometime. I'm trying to come up with things that would go great on T-shirts. So I may be stealing that from you. I don't think anybody's saying that we're going to run against Trump in 2020 on the Russia issue. The Russia issue has to do with the fundamental integrity of what's left of our shambling system of government. But when we consider the Russia issue, there are some things that are not being taken into account, or I don't hear being taken into account much. One of which is this. We talk about, Jefferson Davis, Beauregard, Sessions, the Third, the Attorney General of the Confederacy, United States, had another meeting. Apparently, Sergei Kislyak has these, like, amnesia rays that shoot out of his eyes, or, I don't know, sharks with frickin' laser beams or something. And people just, as was noted earlier this morning on that program, people just can't seem to remember having hung out with him. Or his cronies and whatever. That being the case, it is worth remembering when people say, "Wow, yeah, so and so had a meeting here, so and so had a meeting," and they act like it's something that's Trumpy. And I think if you've seen, for instance, that documentary, the Dutch documentary, "The Dubious Friends of Donald Trump," you know that the guy has been mobbed up with the Russians for decades. But there's one little fact that's banging around out there, and it's this. Who set up, who arranged for Sergei Kislyak to be at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland last summer? Who did that? Anybody? Bueller?
I thought it was Michael Flynn.
No. Sergei Kislyak was invited to a reception paid for and held by the Heritage Foundation. To me, that means something. That means that that Kislyak has his hooks, and that means the Russians have their hooks in the Heritage Foundation.
I wonder, is the Heritage Foundation a Koch brothers funded thing?
It's an every right wing oligarch piece of shit funded thing. Okay, and that's why I bring this topic up, Steve. The Heritage Foundation is the beating heart of modern American so-called movement conservatism.
Yep.
You cannot be a powerful Republican without bending a knee and maybe dipping a curtsy to the Heritage Foundation. Okay? So that means, and I'm sure some, right, goddamn elitist establishment shill, it's the new McCarthyism. Fuck off. But that means if Kislyak has his hooks in Heritage, the Russians have their hooks in Heritage, and Heritage has their hooks in the entire Republican congressional majority power structure. That essentially means that every Republican sitting on that dais yesterday in the Intelligence Committee was probably, to one degree or another, a creature of the Heritage Foundation. Which at least tells me that the Russian problem, such as it is, runs a shitload deeper than Donald Trump, Donald Trump's cronies, Donald Trump's mob friends, or anything like that. And in fact, there are, I've read articles, there are paper trails of Russian money into various and sundry highfalutin Republican congressional creatures, PACs and pockets and so forth. And I personally think the problem is far deeper than anything we know or suspect. And, Steve, I don't want to let go what you said about your distrust of the intelligence community, your distrust of law enforcement, your distrust of the FBI. I share every bit of that at a 200-proof level.
Yeah. And that's why this whole thing has been very uncomfortable for me. But and I'll say this, and I'll shut up and let you, make sure you get to talk again. But what I'm finding really weird is that this is one of those rare instances where all things seem to be pointing right at the same direction, which seems to. I don't know. There's just this, and maybe it's my wishful thinking and the fact that I hate it. I can't even say his name. I hate it so bad, but in a criminal investigation, any kind of investigation, when things start, when you're on the right track, everything starts to kind of point in a direction. And that's where this seems to be going. And that's where my skepticism about law enforcement and intelligence, at least in this instance, I'm a little bit more willing to believe, because
kind of a struggle, isn't it, Steve?
It's a struggle. Yeah, it is a struggle. Again, my inclination is to say this is the CIA and the NSA. And even those of us on the left, weren't we, lamenting the fact that they were doing warrantless wiretapping, 10 years ago, and we were, all kinds of things we were lamenting. And, we were lamenting, back in October, what Comey did when he went before that committee doing what he did. And suddenly this is the guy we're supposed to
Yeah, which is why I'm not going to get a man crush on Jim Comey, or a law enforcement crush, or a Fed crush, or whatever we're going to call it.
Yeah, the guy comes across,
Steve. I mean, let's just say this. If you were the lawyer examining him on the stand, wouldn't you think he was a little bit like squirrely?
I honestly didn't think squirrely. I did think a little, not a little, but I did think he typified the arrogance that I see in law enforcement, and particularly federal law enforcement. But again, when somebody is very free and open about things that don't favor the narrative, and things that actually go against the narrative, and they don't try to spin it.
That was what made him credible yesterday.
That's where I was watching and reading and thinking to myself, it's credible. And I almost feel uncomfortable finding it credible, but.
Well, I heard, it was Jeffrey Toobin. I heard him this morning saying, well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if I was defense counsel, I'd say that Jim Comey was damaged goods. Because he helped Donald Trump yesterday.
Well, that's the whole thing. He wasn't trying to help or hurt.
That's the thing, exactly what you and I agree on, that made me go, God, it's believable, because he did say some things that helped Trump. I think he was pretty pissed too. And I think, frankly, I think he, like most of, you know, and I'm sure everyone's slimy about that guy. And I have a feeling that there's just something not to trust here. No, this was the meeting at Trump Tower.
Trump pulled him in and whispered in his ear, you know, whatever. He was very uneasy about that whole thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, then it comes through with, he told Sessions, where he's, dude, make sure that you are in the room when that guy's around, because there's something, you know what it is, and I that's where I'm completely in agreement with, well, generally in agreement with Bob here, is that I found it credible because it wasn't perfect. It wasn't perfect. Exactly. It wasn't perfect.
And especially when you take it, see, here's another one of those terms of art. If you take it in pari materia with the testimony given the previous day by Coates and Rogers, who wouldn't even answer questions about non-classified material and just sat there and stonewalled, those guys didn't come across as credible. They came across as contemptuous, but not credible.
And I'll tell you something, Bob. I suspect that if the Democrats had been in control of the Senate when that happened, they would have voted to hold those guys in contempt.
There would have been a contempt vote. Which loops me back, Steve. The whole Russia, Heritage Foundation, every Republican thing, for me at least, explains a lot of Republican behavior. It explains the bizarre behavior of Devin Nunes. It explains the lick spittle behavior of Marco Rubio yesterday. It explains the Lankford and Cornyn, and, you know, why did you keep taking his calls? You know, they make it sound like it's some sort of a, the Republicans tried to make it sound like it was some sort of a dating relationship gone bad. Well, you didn't want to be alone with him in the same room, but you still took his calls, bitch.
I thought the same. And look. As much as everyone here,
you wanted it. You've got a crush on him, don't you?
Yeah. And Bob, as much as nobody here likes it, when the, I don't care who you are, when the, when you get a phone call and someone picks up, when you pick up the phone and you hear the president of the United States is on the phone for you. Well, unless you're Barack Obama, generally speaking, the person receiving that call doesn't say, sorry, I can't talk to the president right now. It's a call you take, even when you despise the person. And I think it's very clear that Comey despises Trump. I think he thinks Trump is just a scumbag. But, you know, and in that same vein, it's like when when he was like, well, I hope you drop this. And Kamala Harris made such a great point about
that.
I mean, she made a great point about
Wait. Before you say anything about Kamala Harris, we have to add a caveat. Kamala Harris is nowhere near ideologically pure enough. We just want to make sure that everybody understands that.
Okay, right. I just sparkle farted.
Goddamn glitter in your shorts starts to itch after a while.
After a while, it just starts to itch. But she made the comment about, you know, when you have a person holding a gun to your head and they say, you know, I really hope you give me your wallet. Come on. Or when you're sitting alone, and I think you have mentioned this, Bob, from a historical perspective, in the construction of the White House and the construction of the Oval Office, that building, that office, was specifically meant to convey that you are in the presence of power.
Yeah.
And I don't care who you are. When you're sitting alone with the president of the United States and he's sitting behind his desk and you're sitting in front of it and he says to you, you know, I really hope you can let this go. What kind of moron says, you know, would say, well, I guess.
Right. No, that whole environment is designed. I don't care if your hair's on fire, you've grown fangs. And wings, and you're coming in there with your dragon tail wagon, and you're just going to raise hell. I'm going to tell that son of a bitch what I. Nice tie, sir.
Uh huh.
Yeah, that it. And so by the way, I need to add in another caveat because I praised. Or at least mentioned favorably Angus King last night because I'm sorry, I'm a history nerd. I think it's really cool that, you know, he just had December 29th, 1070, hanging out on a synapse somewhere. Oh, yeah, I was there, you know, because it sounded like he did. Cranky Todd wants me to know that... Angus King is also insufficiently ideologically pure.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know how I got dipped by the heel in this stuff when I was a little kid in the Southern Baptist Church in the basement. And whether you buy into the whole Jesus died for our sins thing or not, and I don't, there are some lines in there that stick. One of which is, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. You know, you can even define God however you want to in that Bible verse. And you can take it out of the lovely King James Elizabethan English and you can say, everybody's fucked up and not met the standard of ideological purity. And that's the damn truth. But you don't have to be utterly ideologically pure to drive a nail with a hammer, okay? There are issues we will deal with on another day. But when the house is burning down, you don't look up and say, you know, that fucker has terrible taste in wall treatments. Really? Shag carpet, Angus? Goddamn, Kamala. Wall sconces? And it, it just... It,
it makes me feel like we're never that we're not going to solve the problems we so desperately need to solve, because you got people going, I don't know, you know, that semi gloss enamel, you know, yeah, it just right. doesn't last.
You know,
wait, what? You want me to throw buckets of water on the fire? Look at that paint. And that's how a house burns down.
Yeah, it's a clear case of the boat's leaking. I don't care who you are or what you are. Bring your bucket and start shoveling. Maybe that's not the word shoveling, but you get the point. I'm 100% with. You know what? I have to tell you something, Bob. I used to be very much one of the. Yeah, I was a Hillary hater for a long time, and the more I really got into it and started thinking about it...
Well, I'm not exactly on the Christmas card list, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. But then I also began to realize, you know, as much as we might not like to think that oftentimes choices come down to, you know, the lesser of two evils, so to speak, or the less bad choice, guess what? That's life.
Well, it is, but in this one, I cannot tell you how thoroughly I reject the lesser evil argument.
Yeah, I don't particularly seeing where we are now.
We had a choice on November the 8th between, no, really, fucking evil, and but her emails. And a shitload of people confused but her emails with, oh my God, she's just as evil as Trump. Or, the lesser of two evils is evil. It's still evil. Yeah. I'm voting for Jill, because she's not evil. She's just a trust fund baby that thinks Wi-Fi is rotting our brains. Fuck!
Who doesn't know the difference between Cincinnati and Cleveland, or whatever it was.
let's vote for Trump and just burn this whole motherfucker down.
Right. You know, burn, you, baby, I was, burn.
I was in that position. If you remember, Bob, I actually had written to you and said, because you told the story about the healthcare issue, and that hit home for me. And it was, and I've even thought about myself. I thought, you know, there seems to be at least some sort of groundswell right now, and a lot of that's because of Trump. And there's a part of me that's going, well, you know, if Hillary would have been elected, then we wouldn't have that. Maybe this is why this is might not be such a bad thing. Then I remember the fact that if this health care plan passes, or I should let me rephrase that, if this tax cut plan passes, there are 23 million people who are
fucked,
have a much higher likelihood of dying soon or being sick for a very long time. And I thought, you know what, I'm the same way. I'm not willing to sacrifice. Let me rephrase that. I have no right to sacrifice my fellow Americans' health and welfare on the altar of yes, but her emails.
Right, and see that's why the whole but her emails lesser evil argument was such bullshit. It was self-centered as all hell, and it also but beyond that, see, even the people who just couldn't, who were so pure that they couldn't bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton, even they expected her to win. Okay, they did. They expected her to win. I would say the vast majority did.
And did you see what they did in the House yesterday, Bob?
Yes, I did. Just one second, Steve.
All right.
They expect the people who couldn't bring, who, you know, voted third party, didn't show up, didn't vote at all, you know, voted for Jill. They still expected Hillary to win, and that they could rely on the rest of us to do the dirty work while they stayed above it all and supervised. Okay. Yes, I did see what they did, Steve. But go, please, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I interrupted. But while our heads were turned, they snuck in something very dastardly in the House yesterday. Overturned Dodd-Frank, all our financial protections about
banks burning us. I mean, they're going to throw all that out the window now.
Well, but that okay, but that was the House, and you know, does it get through the Senate? Now, I'm the king of cynics on the Senate. I expect the Senate to quietly go about the business of passing the AHCA too.
That's what the Twitter sphere and all of the news organizations are saying.
And once again, I said it months ago. But you know, here we struggle to keep a little radio program on the air, while the millionaires, Benghazi, you know, the millionaire journalists.
Steve, do you mind if I break in with one question? So, whole premise to all of this was that I kind of believe that the reason that this whole Russian thing came about was as a distraction, a deliberate distraction, and for precisely the reason of this, you know, passing the Health Care Act, the Tax Cut Act, et cetera, and doing as much mayhem as they could possibly do. So my question is, Steve, wouldn't Mr. Comey then be the perfect person to manufacture credibility?
I see where you're going. At some point, and this is going to come out wrong. I don't know. I don't know how else to say it. At some point, what we have to do is stop seeing boogeymen behind every corner. And sometimes what we see is just what it is. And I'm not saying I necessarily disagree with that, but let's just assume that that's true. We don't have the luxury of thinking about that right now. Our lives are at stake. And I think that's our lives are at stake, not just because of what's coming down the pike, but because, you know, this country, we're no longer in a rapid decline. We're in a precipitous decline. We're not rolling down the hill. We've fallen off the cliff. And I mean, I won't kid you. That's occurred to me. And another program that I listen to has been beating the drum of what Bob just talked about. Of this, we got, even though this is a huge story and a big thing, we have to make sure that we keep our eyes on the fact that their domestic agenda, at least mostly, is going forward. But no, I apologize who asked that question.
Mark. But you know, okay, nothing. Mark. Look, when people say things like, "Yeah, well, you know, Bob Mueller's on the case, but it's going to take him 18 to 24 months to get to the bottom of this," the Republicans go, "Cool. There's no end to the chaos and mayhem we can stir up in 18 to 24 months." And so the Republican leaders of the House and Senate committees just kind of take a snooze.
Because you know what, Bob? Once McConnell and all of those things, those cockroaches, get their way, once they have what they want, which is really their tax cut, that's what this is all about, they're going to drop Trump like a hot potato. And all, you know, and I think that's where what Mark said has a lot of credibility, is that to a certain extent, they're looking to prolong this.
They have an agenda.
Until that happens, exactly. Until that happens,
of course.
And you know, just to add one last wrinkle before we get out of here, the other thing that I saw on that program, that's my dirty little habit in the morning, was a little appearance by Nancy Pelosi. Goddamn neoliberal shill!
I've seen that.
In which she said, you know, if I was going to give him an advice, I'd tell him to get some sleep. You know, get some rest until the synapses are firing. That was kind of surprising. I mean, she did everything but say that he is suffering from mental illness.
Oh, you mean the president? Yeah, I saw that too.
And so Charlie Pierce pointed out earlier today, if there's an easy way out for him, what did he say? He's got the diet of a college sophomore, and he's not in the best of health. Your old Father John, rest you. And, you know, then just let Pence take over, and they'll continue with the agenda. Because as was pointed out the other night, there's a Pence pack for 2020. And that's kind of unheard of.
They're going to fleece us on the way out the door to count on it.
Oh, they're going to take anything that's not nailed down. If they can't steal it, they'll fuck it, and vice versa.
I don't agree. I think they'll pry the things up that are even nailed down.
But I mean,
But
again, once again, proof positive that this ain't a Trump problem. It's a Republican problem. It's what they did in the Reagan presidency. It's what the Republicans did. Under dim leader, okay. I mean,
so here's I think the bottom line, Bob. Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Sorry.
No, go.
The bottom line is this, and I've made this point several times: the Democrats need to learn how to play politics the way the Republicans do, because over the last 20, 25 years, the Democrats have suffered epic, unbelievable losses. If you go back to the midterms of 2000, I believe it was 2014, maybe it was 2010 or 2014, the Democrats lost a net of around 650 to 700 seats throughout the country in legislatures and city councils. The Democrats went from controlling most of the states in those Obama years to losing the Congress, which you'll remember that they had when he began, to a situation where of a total of 99 legislatures in the country, in the GOP controls both in 33 states, and they control the only legislature in Nebraska. They control something like 35 governorships. So and again, as Bob knows, the rubber hits the road at the local and state level. And with them controlling everything at the federal, local, and state level, there's nothing to stop them. Nothing. At least if the Democrats had some sort of control at the local level or state level, they could, you know, at the federal level, laws passed, they could put the brakes on. We're not in that situation.
No. Not even.
And the Democrats continue to not. Democrats, you know, politics is two things. It's governing and it's getting elected. Getting elected is a blood sport. And you have to. I've come to the conclusion that you have to do everything short of lying about and accusing your opponent of something awful, even if it's not true. Everything, as far as I'm concerned, is on the table, and Democrats need to stop coming to a knife to a fight, an AK-47 fight with a plastic butter knife.
Well, you're making the same argument that Asa and I were discussing after watching Get Me Roger Stone.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was at my office and fell asleep tonight for about an hour.
No. I don't mean no. That wasn't on air. That was off air. But it's the same thing. You know. Learn that there are no Marcus of Queensberry rules in this shit.
And you know what, Bob? We have to learn that when they're down, we don't help them up. We kick them harder.
Kick them. Keep kicking.
And when they're bleeding, we pour alcohol on that bleeding. And we need to understand that elections are not about that. They're not about ideas. They're about winning, and you do everything you can to win, because I don't care how pure you think your election is, if you don't win, or how pure your ideas are and good they are,
right,
if you don't win, they don't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, ask any football coach. There ain't no such thing as a moral victory that doesn't wind up with you having more points on the board than the other team does.
Yep. And close on the counts and horseshoes and hand grenades, all those good
and atomic
good,
weapons, good. Exactly. Hey, Steve, we got everybody. We got to get out of here. I want to thank you all. Thanks, Andrew, for your participation. Hope to hear more from you later. Thank you to everybody who jumped into the Skype chat group this evening. Thanks for your idea contributions. Thanks to Sparky for moderating, as he has for these many years. Thank you to Billable Rick and Ron in the Puttable North. And thanks to Steve from Georgistan and Mark in Texas. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. This was a really engaging Friday on the front porch. Y'all made it really excellent. And thank you to Laborman and Chris in Germany and Tom in the Bay Area for making their challenge. And thank you to everyone who responded to that challenge so that, we don't have a big hole to dig out of next week. I'll try to be here Monday. If I'm not, I hope you'll forgive me. Tuesday, I'm definitely not here. And so thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you, Steve from Georgistan, our often midweek utility chat room moderator. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Have a wonderful weekend.